Welcome to Configure It Done, the podcast where SAP leaders share real insights, proven strategies, and stories from front lines of major SAP transformations. Get inspired, get informed, let's get it done.
Welcome back to the Configure It Done podcast. And we were just talking before, we've had one guest that came on for the second time. And today we've got another guest that's coming on for the second time. Welcome back.
Thank you. Hello to Halls. Special company.
Excellent. Sarah, I'm going to let you introduce or reintroduce.
Yeah, let's do it.
Cam, yeah, that'd be good.
Cam, it's been 6 years since our last podcast.
Goodness.
I know. It was a very different office. It was a much smaller office. This was a much smaller room.
Yeah.
This setup was a lot less legit. But we are now inviting you back, and you've been on such a journey for the last couple of years.
Yes.
I think the last four or so. Tell us about what you've been doing at Suntory.
Thank you. So I left EY and started working for Suntory back in February 24, February last year. Seems like a lot longer ago.
It does.
and Suntory is an interesting place. So when I got there, they were in the process of this major transformation called Field of Dreams. And the Field of Dreams is based on the blank canvas of a couple of acres of land up in Swan Bank where they needed to build a new facility. Why do they need to build a new facility? Well, they came to the conclusion that two of the organizations, Beam Suntory International, the company behind all the alcohol, you'd recognize Jim Beam and Coke and Canadian Club and Dry, -196, Midori, all those brands. Beam Suntory owns all of those. And they were being bottled by Coca-Cola, one of the big soft drink manufacturers in the country. And that agreement was coming to an end. Meanwhile, Frucor Suntory, who you recognize from looking in the fridge at your 7-Eleven with V, Maximus, Boss Coffee, Rockstar, all of those sort of energy drinks, energy market, and canned coffee, busy doing all of that work, bottling most of that in New Zealand, but not in Australia. And so Suntory Holdings looked at this and said, that contract's expiring. We've got a soft drink manufacturer. What if we got the soft drink manufacturer to bottle for Beam Suntory? And of course, the Frucor people took a big breath in. We're already out of capacity. How are we going to do this? And so the decision was made to invest $400 million in building a new facility in Queensland in order to increase the capacity of the manufacturing capability, add alcohol to it, take over from Coca-Cola. Now, Suntory is a Pepsi bottler worldwide, and Australia was the only place that Coke was doing the bottling for us. So that, I think, played a role in, we want to remove that relationship. It was coming to an end anyway. Now, the challenge with this is that it ended on 1st of July, 2025. And we knew that 4 years ago.
And that was a hard stop.
A hard stop. If we didn't have some way to make the product, we wouldn't sell the product and there'd be stockouts. So, you know, if you think about your average liquor store, your average supermarket, we're everywhere. The products are everywhere. And so being a highly competitive market, we wanted to make sure that we could land this project, as James used in our strategy director says, we have to land this on a 5-cent piece from 4 years out. And so a lot of planning, a lot of thinking went into it. And what ended up happening was that Frucor Suntory and Beam Suntory International effectively formed a partnership to create Suntory Oceania. And I'm wearing the shirt.
And Sarah always corrects me when I say Frucor Suntory.
Yes.
Oh, because I got in trouble when I said it for the first time at a meeting. And I was like, oh, so how's it going at Frucor? They're like, no. It's Suntory Oceania.
Exactly.
Sorry.
Exactly right. And they've done quite a good job at rebranding that. So Suntory International now is a full multi-bev company. And we make all of those drinks that we make in New Zealand, we now make them in Swan Bank. In fact, at some point in the last 6 months, the switch happened from things being sold in Australia being made in Australia and not being shipped across the ditch.
Yeah.
And that's that little milestone just quietly passed us by. So next time you're in a 7-Eleven, go and grab a can of V and see whether it's got the Swan Bank address on the outside of it, because that's how you. Similarly with the alcohol, we took over from Coke successfully on the 1st of July. And now you start to see our products in the market. My son works at the local liquor lounge in our place. Every time I go and visit him, I'm always going to the ready-to-drink fridge first to have a look at where's this can from? Is this one of ours? And I actually won the prize for finding our first set of cans in the wild.
Oh, really?
Hey, look, these are from Swan Bank.
I might come after you for discounts.
Yes, exactly right. Now, to get there, you've got to go back to that history of Frucor Suntory, based in New Zealand, working out of the office out at North Strathfield, the old Arnott's factory. $700-800 million company. Being Suntory, on the other hand, working in their offices in North Sydney, not really manufacturing, more a marketing and branding company, and CCP doing all their work. R&D being a really tricky thing. How do you develop a new product when you don't own the manufacturing site? And so bringing these two companies together makes a lot of sense when you think about what is Suntory's edge in the competitive market of drinks generally.
Mm-hmm.
It's about getting new flavors out there and getting them out there quickly. So time to market, new product development is actually the sharpest edge we've got. But in the case where somebody else is doing a bottling, that gets really hard because you don't have end-to-end control over, hey, can you just try this and where are we getting the cans from and can you get the artwork ready and all that stuff. So bringing this together is really going to strengthen our edge. To get here, though, was an awful lot of work. And so when I started in February last year, I walked in, started having meetings with people, and started realizing the breadth of, firstly, the work that had already been done. So Fruitcore had updated to S4 about 18 months before that and had been on the Universal Journal approach. They released Act Docker, which is the Universal Journal, which gets rid of FICO altogether. And that's really powerful. They built a dynamic pricing engine, which means that we could then set prices for customers and have it all flow through. They had already built a centralized CRM system that powered the call center and the iPad app that the sales reps used for non-alc and the online store. It's a single source of truth for customer. So anytime the customer rang up, they got one view of Suntory and we got one view of that. That was already in place, which then was an amazing foundation to build off because then we needed to go through this list of things. We needed to power this new facility in Swan Lake. Literally was a field of dreams, grass, when we bought it. In fact, it was mostly swamp. And so we had to fill it in and flatten it out and build this enormous facility. I'm sure you've seen photos of it.
Yeah.
With enough capacity, it's got capacity in it to double in size. So we pre-built that in terms of the big concrete pad and the shed and all that stuff.
Yeah.
It then needed to take over the non-alc production from New Zealand. So it needed to start making all of the, V and the Maximus and all that stuff. Boss Coffee we bring in from Japan already pre-canned. We needed to build a new supply to get all of our supply network planning in place to be able to feed this new facility. We had to then pour alcohol into that. So we needed to build another set of supply chains for all the alcohol that needed to come in. We needed to build an alcohol tax solution. Because in Australia, we pay excise. We have to pay customs duties. One of the first things that Matt, my boss, threw to me was, know anything about excise? I've gone, nope, but I know a few people who do. Got on the phone to some ex-colleagues at EY. And
I was going
to
say EY had done probably one of the few excise tax management for Lion.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. They've got some good skills in their tax technology department. Happy to give them a plug. Pete Sanders is great. But the problem we had was no one in the company had done excise. And so we were trying to gather requirements and design things and we were getting crickets. So we had a go and we built it ourselves based on what we understood and what we knew and we got it mostly right. We had to, the thing with CCEP is that not only did they manufacture, but they also distributed. So all the salespeople were part of that. So we lost that sales channel, had to build a new one. That's 150 people that need to be onboarded and trained and given laptops and iPads.
Huge.
And then the alcohol needs to be added to the online store and the iPad app that they're going to use because we don't do that at the moment. Now, of course, when you do alcohol, you can only sell to people who have a license, which means that if you log on to our online store and you don't have a valid license, you can't even see that we sell alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
So the online store had to be modified in a way that wasn't going to show alcohol to people who weren't going to have it. Right? We were in the process then of building that new alcohol route to market with all of the tools and hiring all the people and onboarding everything. So not only do we have to build the whole alcohol route to market and hire all those folks, we decided that we were going to realign IT instead of being locally aligned with global. So there's a whole IT transformation going on with Matt reporting both on the executive leadership team locally and then up to the new APAC CIO. And on top of all of that, we were going to change the brands of these companies. So the entire visual identity of Fruitcore Suntory and Beam Suntory International needed to be changed into Suntory Oceania. By the way, we moved in together.
Yeah, right.
So we relocated, set up a new office, kitted it out, and it's fabulous. You've seen the fit up.
It's done.
Sit to stand desks. There are no USB-A plugs anywhere. It's all USB-C, which my infrastructure team is very happy about.
Yeah.
They went hunting. They found a couple and they got rid of them. And so, you know, when you look at all of that list of things, I call it the six impossible things before breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
And so as I started to understand this, I went home and said to my wife, what have I done?
But what was your role when you first, like, what did they actually bring you in to do?
Officially PMO director.
Yeah, how long did that last?
Well, technically that's still my role, but I prefer, and we'll get into some of that conversation around PMO. I don't like PMO for PMO's sake. And so I prefer to call myself the program director.
Yeah.
Because I think there's a better role there for coaching project managers and helping them understand rather than a PMO manager that polices and says, you haven't done that right, you know?
Yeah. Mm.
And so I was at a lunch recently put on by Key Consulting talking about PMO, and I was thinking, these people are all more on the, you're policemen, not coaches. One of the guys did say project management is one of the last corporate team sports. I thought that was a really good analogy. And so I thought, well, as a program director, what's my role? I think I'm a coach. The coach, the physio, the doctor, fixing things when things go wrong, coaching them at how to do it.
So that's interesting. We had your colleague, Rachel Brown, mm. on the podcast, and she was solely on the business side and transformation. So where did you, obviously you was on the IT side, and tell us a bit more about where you sat. Yeah,
Rachel was my second boss. So Rachel and Matt were the two people I reported to, Matt from a hardline functional point of view and Rachel because I was delivering the IT component of her program.
Mm-hmm.
There was the IT workload was kind of split into the business as usual IT that needed to be run and the transformation workload or all the stuff we needed to build for FOD. The six impossible things were mostly in the transformation space. And fortunately, Matt and Rachel and I and Farhan, her offsider, we all got on very well. But it was a question that I asked in the interview process was, okay, what's the reporting line here? And I got a very confusing answer. Sounded like a very bizarre love triangle. And I went with it. It was okay. But yeah, we quickly sorted it out. You know, Matt was reporting for Rachel.
Was there method in the madness there, you think?
Kind of like, we will work this out.
Yeah, I think we will work this out. Yeah. It was in a transitional phase. So I basically took over Matt's role when Matt was reporting to the previous CIO who wasn't on the ELT. And so all of that kind of shifted 90 degrees with Matt being elevated into the CIO role, sitting on the ELT, me reporting mm-hmm. more to Matt, and then dotted lining into Rachel. So we had to kind of figure it out as we went.
Yeah,
it sounds like it was kind of more of a let's just get the right people in because it while you knew where your end goal had to be 4 years down the line this is a non-negotiable I think the journey there took so many twists and turns.
I think you're right, it's all about you hear often people talking about success and the key thing we did was hire the right people. I often hear that. I think in this case I'm not trying to pump my own tires up here, but I think we were surrounded with a lot of the right people.
Yeah.
Even the Frucor people, even though there was a low, I say this openly, the Frucor IT group were very immature. You know, they were a $600 million small organization used to doing things in their own way. And part of that was almost being too kind and saying yes too often. And they had a lot of money to spend and it was all okay. And we kind of figured it out.
It's very common with organizations as they're embarking on a big transformation. Yeah. That's not.
Particularly embarking on growth as well.
Yeah. Like
when you go from that small to mid-sized, you're now playing the big leagues with your Lions, with your Asahis. Yep. You're really grabbing some large portion of market share. The growing pains of culturally what that team has to go through.
Mm.
And you don't necessarily want to gut your existing permanent team.
Yep.
Like the knowledge has been there. It's been built up, particularly I think for small to mid-sized companies. Like the shared knowledge can be up to 20 to 50 years in an IT team.
Absolutely.
Depending on tenure.
Yeah. And especially in the Frucor team, the knowledge they had of the business was extraordinary. Like normally you get an IT team that's lab coats and boffins and what's the business?
Yeah, just over there in the corner.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we had enough knowledge for us to be able to build the excise system without any business knowledge at all, without any business input. With the route to market stuff, we knew what they wanted before they asked us because we just knew how the business worked. So that's unique in Frucor. I think that was one of the keys to success. But seeing this list of six impossible things, I really thought that were crazy. I thought I'd done a terrible thing joining this organization. I was thinking, wow, how is this going to work?
And there's seen no things at EY. You've been through projects like this that start.
And any one of those things is a major project. You know, rebranding and moving to a new office. Most companies just go, we're not doing anything else. And fitting out a new facility, that's a big project. You know, completely changing the way the route to market works and bringing on a whole new product set, which is alcohol, which has its own complexity. That's a whole project in itself. So I was initially very concerned that we got to stop some of this stuff. This is crazy. Then when you look at those things, actually we can't stop any of it because we have to go live on the 1st of July. We've got to land this thing on a 5-cent piece.
So Cam, you've got these six impossible things. You've joined an organization. You've got a kind of strange report in line. You've got all this going on. It's a bit of a crazy time. But what are some of the things that you've learned in those early days?
I think the thing that I did, I don't know whether I'm a great program manager or not, but I just like to keep things really simple.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the first things I noticed was the project managers were burning. They were just spinning with all of this overhead and admin and doing so much work, reporting five different ways to five different teams. And I said, I don't think we should be doing this. Can you just write one report and send it out? And they said, oh, maybe. And I went and spoke to all the stakeholders and said, our report's going to look like this now. Okay. And they said, yeah. And so like I kind of then started to talk about write once, read many. You know, we want to be efficient at this. I want to cut down the load because the project managers are also complaining around, I'm so busy, I've got no time. And I thought, this is no good. I need you to be thinking about risk. I need you to be keeping things on schedule and control. So let's cut the admin down. What do you not need to do? All right, just write one report. I'll manage that. They were getting demands from everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And being a yes culture, they weren't saying no.
Yeah, okay.
So one of the first things I did was get them to say no to anyone saying, can you report this way? No. Here's our report, you can have that. And part of that was bringing my colleagues on the IT leadership team together to say, you need to meet with your team every week. You need to understand the status because if anyone stops you in the hallway, you need to know what that status is. And I want you to have a weekly report in your back pocket. And so we created the weekly PSRs. And then I thought, well, we need to roll that up somehow. Let's create a fortnightly project status report where we all got together. And I thought, for sure, this is going to last 3-4 months and then we'll start to see people dropping out and not
doctors busy.
Mm-hmm. Too busy. Yeah. We're creating too much overhead and it's become one of the most popular meetings. And even Matt says, I love this meeting because every project manager goes through all of the status very clearly in a simple format in 90 minutes every fortnight. And he walks away going, I know what's going on.
Yeah.
How did you bring that to life then, Cam? Because it's easy to say it, it's very hard to
like
do
said,
it
it's
and
easy
embed
to
it.
Keep it going for like a month, but you get that drop off rate inevitably because it starts to go on.
I think it's not my first rodeo and I've done this before and it's failed. And so I knew that I had to make it a really sharp, engaging meeting. I had to make it very clear, really short hits, try to bring an element of sort of culture and humanity to it. And so one of the things we do, which is a silly little thing, but it seems to work, and that's, again, based on previous lessons, we've got like, I don't know, 8 different groups that need to report. And so instead of having the same order every week, because then we run out of time and the poor data people in the process, people will never get to speak. So we create this random order of service every time, which is based on me walking in with a piece of paper and looking up at the screen, saying, right, I see you first, you're first. I see you second, you're second. So it depends on this sort of randomized order. So sometimes process will go first. Sometimes testing will go first.
Yeah. Okay.
And that kind of creates it. So then I have to madly type up the order of service and put it in the chat so everybody knows what order.
Yeah.
But it just creates that sort of dynamism of keeping it fresh.
Keeps everyone on their toes as well.
Keeps everyone on their toes.
You presented first, last time. Does it mean you can't middle or last? So you have to be there from the beginning.
Yeah. And sometimes some groups will say, I've got this other critical meeting. Can I go first, please? Yeah, sure. We'll put you first. No problem. But that's good. And the fact that Matt attends and gets really engaged, the heads of solution, my peers all attend and they get really engaged. It's not perfect. I would prefer them to be much more summarized and not get their project managers to run through all of their status the same way that they did on the day before during the weekly.
Yeah.
So we've got to work on that. But that was really kind of powerful and bringing us all together and then getting a forum where we could start talking culturally. So, you know, I'm often there saying, where's the change request for that? Oh, well, you know, we asked it, the business asked us to do it and we thought it was okay. So we just said yes. I said no. you need to raise a change request. And so that becomes then the vehicle to start to form and shape the culture.
So allowing people to be vulnerable as well in those memes, yes.
Yeah, exactly right. So that was one of the things that we did. It was just that pragmatism of, like I said, this does come out of the P&L handbook. It's a case of, as a head of solution, you need to know what's happening mm-hmm. in case you get asked. You need a status report. I want to give you that. Now we're getting into a stage where the transformation is almost done. We've gone live with all of the work that we talked about on the 1st of July. And by the way, it went perfectly. You know, Rachel will say the same thing. There's been a few little hangovers that we're still fixing, a bit of gaff tape we've got to put on that talks about them.
Yeah.
But we went live. We had a massive month, bigger than we thought. All the customers are delighted. The customers have been telling us, we didn't think you could do this.
Mm.
You know, we've seen other big beverage chains switch things around and they've always been disasters. But you pulled it off.
And how gratifying to
hear. Oh, it was incredible. Absolutely yeah. incredible. So that was really satisfying. We have New Zealand to go. Now, New Zealand's a different kettle of fish. They have a high number of small value clients, which is the opposite to Australia.
Mm.
They've got a very distributed network. It's expensive to serve. We're all a little bit nervous about what's going to happen. So we're putting a lot of contingency in place. Plus, it's in the middle of our peak beverage season, December, January, and it's Christmas.
Yeah.
So we start taking orders on the 15th of December and we start delivering them on the first working day, which is the 15th of January.
Most people would say no.
Yeah, in this case, the contract ends when the contract ends. Yeah.
That sounds like the three impossible things, not six.
Yeah, exactly. We're kind of confident because we've done this for Australia. And, you know, for example, I got asked a question about volume. You know, are the systems going to be able to handle that number of volumes? Like, well, we already do that with non-alc. Like, we already do almost that volume with non-alc. And the additional ALK is going to add 10%, will be fine. Right?
Yeah.
And it's SAP. We're talking about thousands of orders, not millions of orders. Right? So so I think that was one of the things that we learned was being really pragmatic. The second thing is the perfect is the enemy of the good. You know, I'm not a perfectionist. If we can hammer and shape this thing to fit and squeeze it in that hole and we get there and then we're over the line and everyone's happy. Yeah. That's really important.
I'm a
perfectionist.
Jay, exact opposite. Husband is the exact opposite. Such a byway, but I'm going through kitchen renovation.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Bloody awful stuff.
Yeah.
Like endless.
Yep.
And the process took so long. It's just like pick a tile, any tile. Mm. It's a splashback. We've said green. They're all green. And Nick's like, oh, I don't know about that lighting though. Oh my God. And I am definitely in that process. I really discovered I am a done is better than perfect.
Yep.
There are perfectionists out there. But even bridging that gap, because you have that tension in a project team, you would have some that are perfectionists.
Yep.
Like, how do you move past just the, okay, we got to get this done?
To a certain extent, Rachel drove that.
Yeah, okay.
You know, if we're going to go forward into our next big project, our big transformation, which is a global template rollout, terrible timing coming straight on the heels of this massive transformation, but that's the way the universe works, then we've got to be really tight. And so I don't want to be in a position that we've been in this time around with change control not being done very well, because you go back to the original requirements and it's a line in a spreadsheet that's very vaguely written and the business says, well, you promised me you'd give me single source of truth. Well, what does that mean? And we have. No, you haven't. Well, I mean, then you get into that argument. So I'm trying to bring back our old methodology. So again, you know, to answer your question before, how do we get to perfect is the enemy of the good? We kind of, we ran it fast and loose.
Yeah.
And we did it with a lot of trust. And we did it with, I think there was a huge cultural glue that got put in place. And Rachel's a big part of that. Matt's a big part of that. I like to think that me and my peers on the RTLT had some hand in keeping that culture together. But, you know, that culture was driven by, we cannot miss this date and it's got to be good enough. And in fact, we had a lot of arguments because the ELT, someone on the executive leadership team had created this phrase of, we have to be as good or better than the other supplier.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, that's terrible because we don't know what that is. Have you got that documented somewhere? So it was constantly being beaten into us. No, that's got to be as good or better than. It's like, well, that's not a requirement. I can't work to that. We gradually kind of managed to strip that out and turn that down to, we just need to be able to operate. And then we'll get better as we go. So we kind of pulled it back to a minimum viable product approach.
So Gavin, I always say like leadership comes from, or culture comes from leadership, or comes from the top. So you mentioned you're a done better than perfect
Yeah.
You mentioned Rachel was done better than perfect. How about Matt?
Matt's in the same mold.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think three of us and Farhan, who is the PMO lead for transformation, we're all kind of, look, whatever, we've got to meet that date and we've got to make sure that we need
too long. So it wasn't like another, not a naysayer, but you didn't have another lab voice being like, oh, I don't know about this.
Oh, we had lots of them.
We pushed it. That's right.
So pragmatism and goal, change control is so important, and that's in every project. So I'm trying to beat that into my project managers now, starting with follow this methodology, go through this gate, get me an email with them saying, yes, that's what I want. So we're currently going through a project at the moment around ESG reporting. And before we've done anything, I've done a race, because we actually don't know what they need us to do. Do you want us to run the project, or do you want us just to build the extract? Do you want to build the extract into a data lake that you can manipulate, or shall we just dump it into a spreadsheet?
Yeah.
What do you want? And we've been trying to get that answer. And they keep saying, how much is it going to cost? And I'm saying, hang on, you've got to tell us what you want.
Yes.
So I'm trying to force them through gate one to get that point. I think we're almost there with that. But that's the sort of the major lesson.
And replicating, obviously, the Australia projects was tough. Like, but sometimes the toughest environments can now build a really, like, hardened team.
Yep.
How much easier is it starting this New Zealand journey? Knowing it's completely different, it has its own challenges, but now having this culture that you don't need to build from the ground up anymore, it's kind of already embedded in there.
Yeah, New Zealand, I thought you were going to say something else. I thought you were going to talk about fusion and not New Zealand. Because New Zealand's kind of done. It's almost in the rearview mirror, and people who hear this will kill me because we haven't gone live yet.
Hopefully this comes out after go live.
Yeah,
everything's great.
So New Zealand is... It's something we have to do. It's 10% of our business. It's got to be done right because we could destroy that market if we're not careful. There's a lot of confidence because we've done it once. There's a lot of nervousness because it's very different. So New Zealand's one thing. Moving into fusion, I think having this, no pressure, no diamonds. You know, so having had that glow up of maturity, and now me being, having this amazing mandate from Matt to say, right, you've got to improve our ways of working. Bang, here's our methodology. We must go through these gates. We have to estimate this stuff. Is hopefully going to help us with this next journey through fusion, which is bigger than FOD with less time. So the pressure will be even higher, and therefore it's going to be even more important for us to remember these lessons and to follow a good methodology and control scope and have a good culture.
Cam, if you were a business embarking on a major transformation like Suntory Group, they've just been through.
Yep.
What's your top three tips, little pieces of advice you could give to them?
I think the number one tip would be culture is king. And a lot of companies, it's really hard to, and culture is so hard to get your hands around in terms of what is it? How do I make a culture?
Mm.
I don't know. Good culture.
They make a good culture, yeah. So it really takes that. You've got to have that, I think, a high EQ leadership team to go, yeah, you're right, okay, let's get some experts in, let's figure out what culture do we want, what are the messages that we're going to live, and then they have to live them. So, you can't just say it and not do it. So I think culture is number one. Number two would be allow enough time. Whatever you think it's going to take, it will take longer.
Mm.
And if you have a deadline that you can't miss, allow enough time. Make sure that you've got enough time in it. It's going to cost you more than you think, but that will pay off in spades when you get close to the time. And then you get to, you said it before, we went live and it went perfectly.
Mm.
That's almost unheard of.
Yeah.
And we are so proud of that we managed to nail it. So that's the payoff.
Mm.
Of investing that time and money correctly, because you get to say that and you get to have those successes and you get to have that great feedback from your customers. You get to protect your business. Mm-hmm. There's other horror stories I've heard out of the market. Big pharmaceutical company, SAP got put in, we don't have time for change management, let's just slam it in because change management was going to be too expensive and take too long. Their warehouse had to shut for 4 weeks.
Yeah, wow.
Couldn't work. And they lost $70 million worth of business. And so if you've gone back in time to say, listen, you're at risk of missing $70 million here, do you want to do this properly? They probably would have said yes, because the cost of doing it probably would have been five.
Yeah.
And this is happening in today's day and age.
Yeah.
So that's number two. And I think the third thing is you've got to have the right level of discipline, not too much and not too little, to be able to control scope and control budget. We landed the thing on the number. So we did it not only on the day, but on the number as well. So we met the budget. But you've got to have the right assertiveness and the right healthy tension between business and IT and between IT and manufacturing and all that sort of stuff to get that to work.
Bacon. Well, we're on to the next then, Cal.
On to the next. Yes, bring on Fusion.
Yeah, Suntory's got kind of only up to go.
Yes.
Which is exciting. So best of luck for the next program. Fingers crossed, all your culture is now deeply embedded as well. As a final parting, you say that a big part of Suntory was no one told them no when they started on this journey.
Yeah.
How important do you think a lack of fear is for a project like this?
I think that was one of the things that I concluded, 6 impossible things before breakfast, and looking around and people just getting on with it.
Yeah.
No one told them no. No one said, you're idiots, you can't do this. And so part of it is naivety, part of it is confidence, part of it is, well, I know what I need to do, I'm just going to do this thing, and everybody doing that, you know, it's like an ant colony. Yeah. Achieving.
Yeah.
So I think that's super important. Again, a really strong cultural aspect of we can do this. But some of that comes from Japanese company culture.
Yeah.
One of the values of the company is a thing called Yate Minahare, which on the surface sounds like foolishness. You know, when you get knocked over, get up and keep going, no matter what, you know, always succeed, always try hard. And you think, well, you know, at some point you're beating your head against the wall, you've got to stop, right?
Yeah.
But there's more to Yate Minahare than that. It's much more positive than that.
Mm.
And it actually becomes motivational and energizing in terms of lifting you up and saying, yeah, we can do this. Let's try and pull this off.
Yeah.
In Suntory, they say, no, failure is acceptable, fear is not. And that's a really interesting saying in terms of, you know, you can fail, but don't be afraid. You've got to get up. You've got to give this a crack. You know?
How rare do you hear that actually in the Australian market?
Yeah,
I mean, Jay and I are having so many conversations now with clients who are just looking at this aspect thing and they're like, oh, geez.
Yeah.
Nah, not right now. I just don't want to do it. And I think there really is like a core feeling of, I just don't want to do this right now.
Mm-hmm.
And then what? Fear, sure. Budget, sure. Lots of things are attributing to that no. It was really interesting to see Suntory 4 years ago start this journey, when 4 years ago we were in a very different market to what we are in now.
Mm.
We had just come out of an unprecedented time in a shared global history. And they were kind of just like, yeah, stuff it. I reckon we'll give this a crack. And we're just going to hope for the best.
Absolutely.
And lo and behold, 4 years.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I was incredibly surprised, and I think everyone was surprised watching it in the Australian market going,
what's
that's an
happen?
Endeavor.
Mm-hmm.
That's a risk.
My advice to clients embarking on their S4 journey is, if you're being handed lemons, try and make lemonade. And that's what we're doing with Fusion, where we've got to do this technical upgrade. And unfortunately, it's a heart replacement. You know, we're basically ripping out S4 and putting in a global S4. How can we make this work for us? You know, and Suntory would say, if you're being handed lemons, reach for the Roku and make a jam tonic. but we're layering up all these work packages to say, well, this is a great opportunity to fix that and to clean this up and to make that simple and to, you know, do all these housekeeping that we wanted to do so that we will get a better outcome rather than what often happens in global template rollouts, where it's done to you and you lose functionality.
Yeah.
So anyone who's either facing a global template rollout or is facing an S4 upgrade, S4 is a similar thing. It looks just like a technical upgrade. But if you're going to be handed lemons, make something good out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's lots of opportunity to do that.
I think that's a brilliant way to end. Cam, thank you for coming on again. It's really refreshing to learn from not only Rachel, but yourself, and have a leadership team that's so open-minded and not perfectionist, but get it done. And it's refreshing for the market. But thank you for coming on, sharing your story.
Thanks, Jay. Thanks, Sarah.
Coming.
Thank you.